Hey everyone, welcome to That Digipod. This is a place to be if you want to learn about what it takes to create a world-class product, team, or culture. I'll be diving into the minds of some of the most inspirational people both inside and outside my own organization. My name is Dipesh and I'm your host for these sessions. I'm a digital product owner at BT, and today I'm joined by someone who has a 17,000 strong team, consumer MD, Mr. Nick Lane. Nick, welcome to That Digipod.
Hey, Dipesh, thanks a million for having me along. I feel quite nervous, actually. You know, I know you've done a few of these already, and so you're getting to be a bit of a seasoned pro, aren't you? But this is my first Digipod. I got butterflies. Go easy on me.
No, I'm really happy to have you here, Nick. I've been wanting to do a podcast with you for the longest of time. So I'm really, really happy to have you on here. And as I said, we had a little bit of a chat before this. I've never had so many messages about someone coming on the podcast before you today. So definitely no pressure on us.
Yeah, that's all it is, Dipesh. They're all hoping I cop this up so they can have a good laugh at my expense, I'm sure.
I'm sure that's not the case, Nick. But let's see. Hopefully it will go smoothly. So, Nick, as you know, this podcast is all about world-class product, teams, and culture.
Yeah.
I would like to know from you, what do you think it takes to create a world-class product?
Crikey, straight off the bat, yeah, that's a really tough one. I mean, I think for me, probably I'd think of three things I would think. I mean, the first is simplicity. You know, I think that's so super important. Yeah, nobody really likes products and things that are too complicated and they have to kind of work hard to navigate.
Yeah.
So simple products, I think, is very hard. And creating that simplicity is often hugely challenging. Yeah, you know, it is a very complex task to create things that are simple. The second for me is great value. And what I mean by that is often I think when people talk products, they immediately go to Apple, Sonos, you know, fantastically kind of high premium level goods. But actually, it doesn't have to be like that. I think the most important equation that a customer is ever going through in their mind is value for money. And so depending on how much you're paying, that determines a little bit the product you're going to get. And as long as the product feels like it's better value than arguably what you're paying, you feel pretty good about themselves. And probably the third, if I was to have a third, actually, is maybe just like one more thing, like a little surprise at the end, just something you didn't expect. And it can be the smallest thing. Like, I'll tell you a very stupid little example. Yeah. But I was actually going through a like electricity move the other day, actually. And I mean, I wouldn't kind of say that I'm a huge advocate of British Gas. I don't like press the end button just because I'm mentioning British Gas.
Yeah.
But actually, I went through part of a switch process with British Gas, and the data fill that they created was huge. So having kind of done this in the past, you know, you have to enter in all of this information and you're constantly selecting boxes. It was just so intuitive the way that they were able to kind of pull data, know about me from certain information that I'd filled in. And I wasn't expecting that. It was something so benign, right? You know, it took me, you know, less minutes than it would have if I was on probably, you know, other kind of providers. So it was just a nice surprise that they'd really got that product brilliant. Yeah. So, you know, I think it can be done. I think it definitely can be done.
Yeah, those are some really great points there. And to go on to that last point, especially around the British Gas example, your whole career for the last 20 odd years has been dedicated to giving customers the best experience that they possibly can have. And what have you seen that have been some key sort of turning points and changes within that time in sort of a product, especially across all different stages of your career?
Yeah, I mean, I think, listen, I mean, I'm in a kind of dream job for me, you know, because I love working with frontline teams. You know, they give me huge, huge energy, and I love the impact that they have on customers. But and frontline teams are so super important. But the key is, which I think has changed over the last you know, probably over the last 10 years, let alone over the last 20 years. I think when organizations in the past used to talk about providing good service, it was always synonymous with customer service. That's what they thought when they talked about service. They thought, well, you know, you've got to provide good service, whether that's in a retail store, whether it's in a call center. But I think the real breakthrough that's kind of happened in the last, you know, maybe 10 years, and certainly within our own world, is we realize that service is much wider than those folks that are just in the front line doing an amazing job. But if you actually want to deliver amazing service for our customers, it's almost about how everybody in the entire organization does their job. So, you know, you're in the finance department, you know, you create the rules and policies that say how quickly we're going to refund a customer's money if we've got it wrong. You know, you're in, you know, you guys know more than anywhere else. You're in digital and you're touching millions and millions of customers every single week. And for many of those customers, they may never interact with one of our humans, one of our brilliant people on the front line. So the only impression that they have about service and how we give that is coming from their digital experience. So I think the killer ingredient for that's changed, you know, over certainly my career, but also is super, super prominent for the future is how you've got to get everybody in the entire organization to realize that service is a critical part of their job. And they might not think, well, actually, I don't speak to customers every day, et cetera. It doesn't matter. The decisions that they're making, the way that they're making those decisions, the consequences of the decisions that they make will have, you know, huge ramifications for how customers perceive us.
Yeah, and I found that certainly that there's a massive impact on customer satisfaction throughout the whole of the business, and it takes everyone to work together to do that. And we've just mentioned at the beginning that you have a 17,000 strong team, which is quite frankly remarkable.
It's a big one.
So how do you set your own standards when it comes to the delivery of these people in these organizations? Do you, the high standards that you have to obviously get into the position that you're in now, but also how do you let those standards influence people?
Yeah, I think it's really great. I mean, for me, I think first of all, the standards that we set internally in the organization always reflect on the standards that you expect to give your customers. So, you know, one of the first places I always try and start is how well is the organization set up to support those that are set up to support our customers, if that made sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, your internal SLAs that you have with, you know, whether it's the HR department, the technology department, is everybody pulling in the right direction? And if we set the same standards internally, if we set very high standards internally, that tends to reflect then on an organization. And that's probably, you know, where I would start. I also think it's really, really important that when we're designing new products and services, I spend a lot of my time and we've got some fantastic teams across the business who make sure that when we are creating new products, creating new services, that they're fit for our customers, but also fit for the frontline teams. You know, it's perfectly possible that they can be one or the other. So we might create a product that's really good for our customers and they really like it, but it's really tough to sell, right? It's 15 steps, it's 8 screens. And, you know, for example, so, you know, it's hard for our teams to essentially become enthusiastic about something that's actually quite a clunky process for them to be able to get to. Or, you know, it's difficult because you've sold a product where, you know, actually our frontline teams can't see how customers are using it. And therefore it's difficult to kind of be able to help and support customers when they have a challenge. So I think both of those things create the standards. I think, you know, internally, what I love about what one thing that I really, really love, and sorry, I could prattle on this for ages, is our value, which is, you know, obviously we've got the three values, but the one that I am most obsessed about is personal. And I love the way, and will always be hugely thankful to a fantastic team of people across, you know, our service team and across essentially the brand team and marketing team who a few years ago now defined that. And they did an amazing job. And one of the definitions that they came up with was, you know, we want to treat you like you want to be treated. And that is an incredibly powerful way to run an organization. You know, when we're looking again internally, you know, what was the standard that we had for our employees as we were as high as what we would like to be treated? Was that coaching session? Was that one-to-one? Was the way that we, you know, let our teams know which kind of projects we're going to go forward with, which we're not going to go forward with. How did we have those conversations? You know, if we're changing the way that we, you know, contract our employees or their terms and conditions, did we deal with that in a way that you'd want to be treated? And of course, it has huge power when we're using it for our customers. You know, yeah. There is no greater pressure than a person can put themselves under by kind of saying, I'm going to have a conversation that is as important as the one I would have if I was talking to my, you know, my mom, my dad, you know, my wife, my husband, whatever it may be, you know, my brother, my sister, my best friend. And so if we kind of look through that lens of always kind of applying, you know, the way that we behave to one another at that high standards, it just kind of automatically ripples throughout the organization.
Yeah. And for anyone who doesn't know, our three sets of standards that you've just mentioned there, Nick, is personal, simple, and brilliant. And personal is such, yeah, as you said, personal is such a key aspect, especially in the digital team. We try to give personalized journeys to customers, but even more so on the front line, Nick, with our colleagues in the contact centers, but also, I guess, from you as well, because your name is on a lot of these emails and the letters that go out to customers as well. How important is it for you that you know the team is like doing the best it can be, because you know it's your own personal brand as well that's potentially at stake if something goes wrong, and the pressure.
Yeah, listen, I think what's I think particularly for huge organizations like we are. It's, you know, one of the key things for huge organizations to do is to not appear like a huge organization when they, you know, when they're talking to their customers. And that's the, you know, that's a huge challenge. It's not easily done. You know, how do you, you know, like in digital alone, right? When you're dealing with millions of transactions, how do you alter each of those ever so slightly to tailor to that customer and the fact that they're a different customer? How do you treat a customer that is maybe in their first contract with us, where a customer that's been with us? So, you know, yes, it's got mine and the team's name, but that's really just a goal to personalize it, because what we're trying to make sure that all of our customers know is, you know, the consumer team is a team of people who live and work in the same communities where our customers live and work, right? And we don't always get things right. We will cock things up. Yeah. You know, not intentionally, but what carries us through when we make mistakes is the fact that they know that we're genuinely good people. We're trying to do the right job, that we make mistakes, but we own up when we make mistakes, and that we're working really, really hard on their behalf to get ourselves into a better place. So I think, you know, not hiding behind corporate names, not hiding behind you know, kind of impersonalization is really, really important. Yeah, really, really important. I think we're doing an ever better job about that. You know, I've sometimes felt maybe, actually, particularly on the BT side, I felt a little bit like we were too, you know, too humble to some degree. Yeah, we were almost had our head bowed low a little bit. And maybe that's a bit of a history and of where we've been at certain points in our history through service. But the teams are doing an absolutely incredible job now. So, you know, part of this is just about us having real confidence in our capability to deliver a really good personal service and to feel proud of who we work for and proud of the names that we represent and the company that we represent.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And if you had to pick your biggest investment over the course of your career, Nick, what would you say it would be? Would it be, you know, time, quality, people? What would you say is your own personal biggest investment that you've had?
I mean, that's a really good one. If this may sound like a really odd answer for somebody who's got such big frontline teams, but actually my investment always has been in data.
Yeah,
I think data is crucial. And, you know, you know, running these huge organizations, running these huge operations, you know, is almost impossible if you've got the lights off. Yeah. And, you know, when you can create transparency about what's going on, how people are operating, what our customers are saying, what they're doing, where they're finding things good, where they're struggling. And if you can create that level of detail, And use that to make decisions and use that to improve the lives of your colleagues, the lives of your customers, it's a huge force for good. And, you know, I am, you know, it's something. The reason I say I'm not sure whether people would expect me to see it is because you think, well, how does that congruent with the fact that you've got so many people, right? Data and people, but actually they go hand in hand together. You know, all of this data is very important to make sure that you're not chasing shadows, you're not chasing anecdotes, you're really clear on what's going to make a real difference to your people and what's going to make a real difference to, you know, to our customers, and that we can measure it so that we know that it's a real focus and we can put a disproportionate amount of effort behind it. So, you know, if I had, luckily, I probably definitely, if you look at a Nick maybe 15 years ago, I had no idea that data was probably going to be as sexy as it is now. Yeah, you know, to me then it was just a way of understanding things. And obviously now it's, you know, people just talk about it fluently and they expect companies to be, you know, using data in every which way. So it's become a real sexy thing to talk about a little bit, hasn't it? But yeah, so that was a very fortunate, I think, coincidence. I've always been fascinated in data and using data for good.
Yeah, I am as well. And I think we're very lucky that we have a data analytics team that we work closely with in the digital landscape, which then, as you, to your point earlier on in the podcast, helps us best service our customers because we can understand their user needs a lot better and give them almost that personalized experience. And it also helps with proposition changes. Everything now is based around data, as you mentioned, Nick. So it is such an important investment. And it also helps us to measure our successes. And that's what I want to talk to you a little bit about now, because we've had a difficult year. Well, the world has had a difficult year. So measuring successes and failures has been slightly different to what it would have done, obviously prior to COVID. But how have you gone about the challenges of measuring success within your own service area over the last year, especially?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Success can be defined through so many different lenses. And I think, you know, ultimately our success, certainly my success, is going to be judged by, you know, two groups of people, our colleagues and our customers. Yeah. And that's all that matters. Yeah. You know, I might have my own personal view about whether it's, you know, doing well, doing not well, but it's those two groups of people who actually have got the actual view that counts. I think for our colleagues, first and foremost, because COVID was a real challenge, you know, this year, you know, we relied on our call centers like never before. Right. And they and we navigated ourselves through the eye of the kind of COVID storm. And they've just done an absolutely incredible job. You know, we were very fortunate that we managed to do a fantastic piece of technology work to be able to get, you know, we've had about 9,000 of our colleagues working from home. Which is about 60 odd percent. And we've had 40% working in our centers. And, you know, and both teams have just done an incredible job of keeping themselves safe and keeping us operational through this period. And, you know, we've been very, very fortunate. You know, we made some great choices, you know, a year or two ago, for example, on the BT side to try and get all of our call centers where we could back into the UK. And it meant that whilst COVID impacted us, it had less of an impact than a lot of our competitors where, you know, maybe they were more reliant on what was going on in different locations around the world. And that created more uncertainty in their organization. Within ours, it was largely all within our control. So the teams have done a brilliant job. You know, it's not an easy job to, you know, for those, for example, teams that have been going into our offices, you know, you can just imagine what was going through their minds when, you know, through lockdown and everybody was being locked down, these folks were getting up in the morning and they were going into the office. Yeah. Yes, of course, they implemented amazing social distancing, but you had colleagues around you. And, you know, essentially the head was probably saying this is majorly risky and the heart was saying that they wanted to help our customers and they just did a phenomenal job. And, you know, we've operated at absence levels that are roughly about 2 to 2.5% above where we were pre-COVID. And how on earth we have navigated through a pandemic with, you know, such a large frontline workforce with that level of impact, I think is something that, you know, it's somewhat of a minor miracle. And I think the guys should be hugely, hugely proud of what we've done.
Yeah.
And then I think for our customers, listen, I think for many, the way I look at the world is for many organizations, just getting through 2020 and fighting COVID would have been success. But, you know, we've achieved the best customer results that we've ever had through that 2020 period. So, you know, we've seen real progress again on the EE brand, which is continuing to go from strength to strength. It overtook Sky for the first time, for example. It's never happened before. You know, fantastic achievement from those teams. You know, if I think about Team Plusnet, they went through a really bumpy period over the last couple of years. We're putting in a new billing platform, and they've really now fixed that and are starting to kind of plow on. They've got the call centers recently back into a really great place as well. So they've been through a really tough year. And our BT colleagues, it's just night and day. You know, we forget sometimes we were kind of wooden spoon winners only 3 years ago for the previous, what, 4 or 5 years. And now our BT colleagues are in the, you know, top three of the kind of best broadband call centers that are out there. Yeah, we're in second place, in third place, second place, which is just an incredible turn. But to do that during the pandemic, yeah, to achieve that level of transformation and improvement is testament to this amazing set of colleagues that we're all part of. And, you know, it shows you how hard they work, not just to fight COVID. But what I would say is, you know, so I think, you know, our colleagues have done an amazing job. I think our, you know, our customers feel, you know, the best they've ever felt about us, which is great. But it's a team game. And, you know, whilst I think the call centers were in a lot of a spotlight through 2020, you know, all of those achievements that we achieved would not have been possible without a team effort in crime. I mean, if I think back to the amount of sheer digital work, for example, yeah, I know your world, yeah?
Yeah.
Like the amount of work you did in the first 6 weeks of lockdown was, frankly, we did more work in 6 weeks than we've probably done in the previous 3 months. Yeah, if we're honest, like people were working just day and night to get stuff done because they knew how important it was. You know, we had teams across the entire organization, you know, supporting. When the retail teams unfortunately couldn't work in the retail stores, they were immediately on board to support in the call centers. Yeah, something that we'd have thought is bananas if we'd have talked about that maybe 2 years ago. So, you know, I think we can all be incredibly proud of how we've navigated through 2020. And I don't think there's going to be that many companies that have come out of it kind of feeling like they both kind of did a great job for their colleagues, but also that you know, they've done a fantastic job of improving the service that they gave to their customers. And, you know, where their customers feel better about us now than they did pre-COVID. I mean, that's, you know, I think quite unique and quite special.
Yeah, for sure. And I was in a position, especially during that time, I usually work on BT Sport, for anyone that doesn't know, across BT.com. But obviously sport stopped, so we were seconded into a COVID response team across BT and EE, which was incredible amount of responsibility that we had, because we are then having to fight against COVID, you know, with our frontline colleagues and with everyone, like cutting it was such, like, a beautiful thing with everyone coming together. Yeah. And a lot of that as well, I put down to cultural change. And these are things which have, like, permanently shifted mindset, right? Like, that culture that we had there is now, where I am at now is a completely different to Depeche before COVID, if I'm to be honest with you. And I would like to get your thoughts on this, because I want to do an episode on cultural changes. I think it's such an important thing. And you've mentioned there just the passion that our frontline colleagues have across BTE and Plusnet as well to do the best for their customers. How do you perceive culture for starters? Because it could mean so many different things to so many different people. And how does that impact products and the outcome that we give to our customers?
Yeah, you know, I think in my head, a lot of culture is synonymous to standards. You know, it all goes back to and values. Yeah, you know, I think if you have really common values and people kind of and then what I mean by standards is that you're seen to kind of action upon them. Yeah. You know, I think it's sometimes you see in, I don't know about you, but sometimes I see in organizations or situations where what they say and what they do are two different things. Yeah. So the words don't match up with the actions. Yeah. And it's like, you know, we're super, yeah, I'll give you a silly example, yeah, but it's a really prominent one for call centers, obviously, yeah, that they kind of might go, oh, okay, you know, yeah, we care passionately about our customers, but then they kind of stick a bot in front of you and they block you essentially from ever talking to a human, yeah. And it's like, well, you can't say it and then do something completely the opposite almost within it. So, I feel like we've got a really good shared value set within consumer world, which is really strong. And to me, that guide, that you're absolutely right, Dipesh. I think that guided us through COVID, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, as you say, there was a phenomenal amount of effort, but also we've got to imagine, right, that everybody was spread to the far corners of the UK as well. Yeah. So you know, there wasn't the ability for people to maybe talk and align physically as much as they would have if we'd have been in one location. So a lot of actually what was going on is people having to work to get work on their own and then to join the pieces of a puzzle together. But what I noticed more than anything is when people were working alone, it wasn't like there was then a block when things came together, right? You hadn't had one person who was going, I tell you what, I'm going to make this really quick and dirty, yeah? And yeah. Somebody else was coming along going, well, this needs to be like super high quality, yeah? Like the common kind of set of values that we'd started to build, that we went into kind of then COVID with, probably powered us through it a little bit as well. You know, like, you know, we had to take people at their word. People were working super long hours. People were forgiving of mistakes, but they were made. Mistakes happened with all the right intent, if that made sense. And yeah, I thought it was a really, really terrific piece of work. And, you know, that's not just me looking back at rose tinted. At the end of the day, again, our customers feel more about us now than they did when we went into it. So it demonstrates that there are a lot of, you know, great decisions made, a lot of hard work made. And I think you're absolutely right. We started to build on the culture that we'd created. And I think we're coming out of it probably culturally stronger than we went into it, I would say. Yeah,
I 100% agree with that, Nick. And before we sort of wrap up as well, I would like to just talk to you about your main learnings throughout your illustrious career, because there's obviously been a few things, and there might have been a few turning points as well. So if you could give any advice to anyone who's looking at you thinking, I would like to be like Nick, or would like to get into the service area to really better satisfy customers, what would that piece of advice be?
Oh, I mean, I think a few things kind of spring to mind. The first thing is you don't always need an amazing grand plan. Yeah. Like, you know, I'm one of these people that would annoy a lot of our talent team. Yeah. Because when I'd have sat down in front of them, it was a bit like when I was at school and they used to sit you down and give you kind of careers guidance, you know?
Yeah.
And I was one of these annoying characters that kind of said, I don't really know, if I'm honest. Yeah. I don't really know. And it would have been the same throughout my career. You know, I know that a lot of people do have a very clear plan about how they're going to get from A to B and B to C, and it's very structured. But I also worry sometimes that there's a bunch of people, and I'm one of those bunch of people, that doesn't kind of think linearly like that, doesn't necessarily have this grand master plan. And I feel like sometimes that's maybe a little bit looked down on, you know, shame on me for not having this great plan. Yeah. And what I mean by that is, you know, my career is built by just seeing opportunities as they arise, and then, you know, fully committing myself into them. You know, the only goal that I've had through my career was two goals. One is I just constantly wanted to feel like I was adding value and that I'd kind of earned my corn at the end of every day. And two is, if I could, from a financial perspective, I always wanted to earn more than my age. That was just my ultimate goal. If I could ever finish my career by earning, you know, salary wise, more than what my age is, I felt like that would be an amazing life. Yeah. And so I didn't really aspire to doing what I do now. And the only reason, frankly, I'm doing it is because it's not part of a super grand plan. It's not part of something that was carefully planned over a period of many years. Seeing opportunities, enjoying what I'm doing, and just loving to take on a bit more responsibility and to back yourself that, you know, you believe that you'll be able to do a good job. And if you commit yourself then to it and you do it with high integrity, I believe that the opportunities are endless. And, you know, what I love about the way that careers are unfolding now in this new world is that I think there's never been a time where what you've done in your past is almost less relevant to what you're doing in your future. Yeah. Like, you know, if you think back if I think back even to my early parts of my career, or even my parents' generation, there were so many careers that were what I call linear. like you started at this level and then you did an exam and you progressed to this level. And then when you become a senior, one of those, you could become the next one of these. And so there are so many. But now, actually, I mean, if you looked even within digital, look and see what, you know, studies people did before they came into digital, it would be hugely vast. Yeah.
Massively different.
It's that diversity, right? It's not like you go to digital school and you come out being digital. Yeah. And so I feel like it's a more level playing field than ever before, where actually it's all about the transferable skills that you've got, less about the actual knowledge that you have about a particular one thing. So my advice would just be, you know, if you've got a plan, brilliant. I envy you, and I you should be super proud that you know how to get to that. If you don't have a linear plan, don't panic. Yeah. Plenty of us don't also have one of those. Yeah. Like, don't feel like you've got a problem. Just look for opportunities and commit yourself when they arrive. And feel like anything is possible, because it genuinely is, right? There's very few jobs in our organization now where you need some kind of formal training qualification to be able to do them, right? So if you're good enough, you're going to be able to be, you know, and you're interested enough, then you will learn and you will do an amazing job. So, you know, I feel like, you know, ambition is an option for all now, more than perhaps it's ever been at any moment in time before.
I love that. Being true to yourself is something that I try to live by as best as I can. You know, I get a lot of people say to me, you know, why don't you give up podcasting and you can concentrate on this? But to your point, you know, if you enjoy something, then why not do it? Because, you know, especially this last year has taught us, you know, happiness in the role is really, really important. So hopefully if you're listening...
You're doing a very important job for the podcasts, right? You know, I think... you know, it's super important. It's brilliant that you enjoy it, but it's also super important, right? It's about communication and inspiring and, you know, getting positive news out to people and people being able to get different points of view across. And I think it's a crucial role in, you know, in the company. So I'm really delighted you're doing it.
No, I appreciate that, Nick. And hopefully if you're listening to that, you can take some of Nick's advice and let us know if it's working or not. Please reach out.
Yeah, it'd be great to hear about people who don't have a linear plan. Yeah, I you know, as I say, don't feel afraid if you don't have one. I'm certainly one of you.
Nick, as you know, I work in the digital team. Obviously, the
T-shirt, the branding gets
away. You know? Exactly, a water bottle is coming to your house. We've already discussed. but we've now been moved into this whole new digital unit. It's been absolutely everywhere. What do you see the digital landscape being like in the future, and how is it going to change?
Wow. I mean, that's a great question. Yeah. I mean, it'd be a great one to have foresight into. But I mean, listen, I think we all know that digital really is going to be the front door for all of our customers into our world. Yeah. And as I mentioned before, I think many customers will only ever live in digital. Yeah. And then in other cases, you know, they're going to go through the front door of digital and kind of end up having a conversation with, you know, one of our fantastic people in retail or in-home engineering or call center. So I think that's crucial. I think personalization, and you touched upon this before, will be absolutely key. I think it's something we need to do more of in digital. You know, I think, we know so much about every single customer. We are so blessed versus, frankly, any other sector that I can think of in the volume of knowledge that we have about what our customers are and what they do. And so I think using all of that information when they kind of come through that front door will be really, really important. I think quality is going to be really important. You know, it's digital for me is a channel that needs constant monitoring, constant improvement. You know, the volumes are so, so enormous, right?
Of course, yeah.
A good journey is going to create plaudits, right? But a bad one is going to kill the brand immediately because the volume going through it is so huge. And of course, it's all played out in public. Yeah. So it's not like it's a one-on-one conversation, right? It's all played out almost in the front garden. Yeah. If that makes sense. So I think, you know, the quality of what we do, our obsession with monitoring it, improving it is going to be super, super key. But, you know, I'm really, really excited. And I'm really excited that we're putting such a level of investment in digital going forward. You know, I think it's going to make a huge difference again to our colleagues and a ginormous difference to our customers.
Right, Nick, we are nearly at the end of that Digipod. And obviously, you being a fan of when we were doing this internally as well, you should know what's coming up right about now, Nick. I want to ask you, if you had to pick 5 celebrities to work across our call centers, who would you pick and why? Who's going to be driving up that CSAT? Or even, do you know what, throw one in there who would actually get the sack right away because they wouldn't just be a people person.
God, blimey, that's a good one. I think who would we struggle with? I think we'd struggle with Piers Morgan, wouldn't we? Yeah, he's too argumentative. Yeah, so yeah. I know it's very kind of, you know, prominent right now, but I mean, as much as I love watching Piers, because I think he's a super amazing journalist, really. Yeah, and you know, he takes everything on. At the same time, I think he would. Can you just imagine being a customer that is, I don't know, trying to get a refund out of Piers? I can just imagine that going completely off track.
Not going well. Yeah?
Not going well. Who else? In the good camp, I'd love us to hire Jurgen Klopp. Yes, I am a Liverpool supporter.
That's the end of the podcast, guys.
No. But really, I think, you know, what a character. And who wouldn't feel inspired after a conversation
passion,
with Jurgen?
Right? Pure passion.
And the passion and the honesty and integrity. So he's got some great values that I feel would be very much aligned to ours. Going on completely the other end of the spectrum, I would love to hire somebody like Billy Connolly, somebody who is just, you know, completely and utterly bonkers. Yeah. And, you know, just to imagine the impact that would have on, I mean, I'm not sure any customer would actually get done what they rang up for. For
no example. One would get off the phone. They'd just be laughing.
No, I know. But it would just be completely bananas, wouldn't it? It'd be completely bananas. And you'd probably have, you know, all the people around Billy being in stitches. So, you know, one of those people, Peter Kay, Billy Connolly, just somebody who's got real, you know, humor in their bones almost. Yeah. And who else? But probably my last one that I was thinking about, actually, it's a character that I've you know, always come across over the last years. I live up in, actually, the Northeast, and there's a kind of a local heroine from many moons ago is a lady called Grace Darling. Okay. And her story has always fascinated me. She, you know, she, way, way back in the 1800s, actually, she lived on an island off the coast of Northumberland where there was a lighthouse with her dad. And, you know, first of all, that's always fascinated me, living on an island just with your family, you know, hardly ever getting ashore. But you know, these were a group of really little islands that used to be treacherous for ships, you know, and one of them went aground, and Grace kind of rowed out on her own, on her boat, to go and rescue all of these sailors. And I was just thinking, you know, when you see the waves in the North Sea, sometimes they're just, you know, huge. And you know, just the level of courage for somebody so young to go in, and the level of physical strength that she must have shown to be able to do that, you know, and she was only a slight woman. Yeah, I just think it's incredible. It shows you what the art, you know, what's possible for a human to be able to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you could look at other amazing, you know, people that have, you know, climbed Everest or done these huge, great big feats, but they're all remarkable in some way about how far you can actually take the human body with spirit alone. Yeah. And yeah, they're probably where I'd go for.
Nice.
So very different choices. Yeah.
I've tried to have a
pretty mixed midfield, you'd probably say. Yeah.
That's exactly it. So that I'd love to see it if you can ever, you know, one or two of them at least, if you're listening to this.
Yeah,
so
that's right. Yeah,
if
yeah,
Nick
yeah,
can yeah, call yeah, in, yeah. he can do that for you, get you involved. Well, Nick, that is unfortunately the end of that Digipod. Thank you so much for coming on. It's been absolutely fantastic. And if you want to give Nick some more questions, please get in touch with myself. You can email us at that.digipod@bt.com or just comment or like on this podcast. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed it, and we'll see you next time. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks a million.